taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you were everyday Americans.
You know, there are few things in life that are truly free. In fact, come to think of it, there may be nothing that is truly free. It may not always cost you money. It may cost you time. It may cost you opportunity. It may cost you your freedom. But there always seems to be a cost. And where there's a cost, someone must pay the bill. So today, I want to ask you a question. What is the cost of focusing all of our hopes and dreams on Washington, D.C.? What is the cost of expecting the federal government to not only fix all of our problems, but to provide all of our needs and to right all of our perceived wrongs? Maybe we should have considered that cost before going down the road to federal supremacy, for I think we are finding out that the cost is dear indeed. Welcome, everyday Americans. You've joined the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network. My name is Paul Engel, and I am glad, so glad you could join me today as we consider this concept of federal supremacy and the true cost of asking Washington to take care of all of us. Now, I recognize this isn't a new phenomenon. This has been going on for decades. I've watched as more and more we've expected the federal government to take care of us from cradle to grave, to provide for all of our needs, to right all of our wrongs, even to protect us from ourselves. So we shouldn't be surprised that America looks more and more like a dictatorial oligarchy than a constitutional republic. We shouldn't be surprised when those in the federal government lord their authority over us, illegitimate though it may be. And we certainly shouldn't be surprised when bureaucrats and others in office think they have the power to dictate to us how we live our lives. Well, for example, in the latest example of this COVID vaccine horror story, Anthony Fauci once again reminds Americans that we should be prepared for the possibility of COVID restrictions coming back. See, we didn't learn our lesson. Lord Acton said, power corrupts and absolute power tends to corrupt absolutely. And this is the case in point. Not only is there no evidence that these COVID restrictions slowed the spread of COVID, there's actually evidence that it may have actually increased the spread of COVID. There's nothing that shows that these restrictions have made things better. What they have done is made the lives of millions of Americans worse. But you see, it doesn't matter. Because to a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And to Anthony Fauci, everything looks like another COVID restriction. See, he just expects us to ignore the fact that he was against masks before he was for masks, that the vaccines have proven to be an absolute flop. They do not stop the spread of COVID-19. They don't give you any long-term protection against COVID-19. About the only thing they've been able to claim is that they think it reduces your symptoms, but even that's questionable. And of course, there's no talk about the actual dangers of the vaccine, the myocarditis, the pericarditis, the damage to the immune system, that multiple doctors, epidemiologists, people who do this for a living have warned us about. We'll just ignore all of that. We're supposed to simply sit back and say, well, Lord Fauci has warned us that there can probably be more COVID restrictions, and if he says so, well, we better do it. Nobody voted for Lord Fauci. Nobody amended the Constitution to give the federal government public health powers, period. much less allow him to simply trash the Constitution of the United States because he thinks he knows better than everyone else. Let's ignore the deprivation of rights and liberties, the deprivation of property, without any due process, without even the consideration of the rights of the individual. Here we have a single person, not even an elected person, a person appointed to office, a bureaucrat, that's claiming the power to tell us that, hey, guess what? You may have to lock down again. I mean, in his own words, he says, I don't want to use the word lockdowns. That has a charged element to it. But I believe that we must keep our eye on the pattern of what we're seeing with infections. How about you worry more about people that are seriously ill? People are going to the hospital and dying. Because if you looked at that, Lord Fauci, you'd realize this has been a hoax from the beginning. The overall death rate has never been above 1.6% that I'm aware of. Now, that's still 1.6% more Americans than we would like, but at least 75% of them, according to the CDC, are people who died with COVID, not of COVID. They had an average of 4 comorbidities, 4 other reasons that killed them, 4 other things that killed them. But for that, we'll just trash all of your rights. Your freedom to decide for yourself, your medical treatments, your ability to go to work, your ability to go shopping, even your ability to follow medical ethics, to have informed consent before being subject to a medical experiment. We gave this man power when we sat back and let the government take it. See, I'm not surprised that the government takes power. That's what governments tend to do. People in government take power. They attract people who want power. The fact that the American people rolled over to get their belly rubbed is the part that truly infuriates me. That we were so intimidated that we never questioned. Not enough of us questioned. Wait a second. Where is your legal authority to do this? We never looked an agent, a government agent, or a law enforcement officer in the eye and said, show me where you have the legal authority to do this. You, government, have to prove you have the right, not the other way around. And here we go again. Now that COVID has been proven to be a minor disease, that unless you were really old or really ill, you got sick, but that was about it. Here we are again. Oh, we're going to have another one. We're going to have another one. Could it possibly be that with an election cycle coming up, those in political office realize the people that have been pushing these COVID restrictions, these lockdowns, these mandates, realize they are going to get their fannies kicked in the next election. So they decide, you know what? We'll let them up, but be prepared. Because sometime around election time or shortly thereafter, they're coming right back after you. Because people in power like power. And there are people that get a perverse pleasure of telling other people what to do and how to live their lives. Now, what are the major costs? What are the major consequences of asking the federal government to do everything? Is that they got to spend money to do it. I've said it before. In researching my book, I found a website that lists the agencies and departments of the federal government. And once I weeded out the duplicates and the stupid and stuff, I found that 90% of those agencies are not authorized by the Constitution. They're not exercising a power delegated to the United States. Therefore, they're a violation of the 10th Amendment. But they're there. And the federal government is spending trillions of dollars, with a T, trillions of dollars, on these programs. So when the coronavirus hit and people were scared and states and cities started locking everything down and destroying them their own economy, what does the federal government do? See, we all looked and said, Washington, save us. You must do something to save us. And they did. First, they started by, among other, spending money on programs and for products and resources and you know, giving us checks. You know, they came up with what? Trillions of dollars in spending to give us a few hundred million in checks. And so what happens when the government prints money like there's no tomorrow? See, the thing to remember is that the federal government is not allowed to spend a dime unless it's appropriated by Congress, meaning the House has a bill that says we're going to appropriate money to spend here. The Senate agrees, the president signs it, or the Congress overrides his veto, and they can spend money. It means your representative, was involved in the spending of this money. So when we see the state governments, in many cases the federal governments, make a complete hash of 29 of not just COVID-19, but so many other things, what do? They spend more money and more money. Of course, it's money we don't have. For years now, the federal government has spent more than $1 trillion more than it takes in, roughly, right around $1 trillion to $1.5 trillion every year. 2020 was a record, and 2021's looking like it's going to be another one. So what does the federal government do? Well, it prints funny money. I mean, that's what the Federal Reserve notes are. They're not based in anything real. They're only based in the trust that the American government will honor it. So we have all this money being printed. Spending, you know, federal government spending like crazy. Not just simply wasteful spending. That's bad enough. Spending on things they're not authorized to. Spending money to fix the mistakes that they spent the money on the last time. And guess what happens? Inflation. See, inflation has been incredibly low for a couple of years, or for several years, and for a couple of reasons, I should say. One of them is, well, you see, the Fed has kept the interest rate so low to keep the economy going that it could soak up that extra cash without generating large amounts of inflation. You see, then we had the shutdowns and the lockdowns and the supply chain problems from our overreaction to COVID. Now that slowed, you know, spending, it slowed everything down, and you had the federal government chunking out more and more and more money. Well, now that things are starting to pick back up again, guess what happens? You have all these financial pressures, and now inflation is running rampant. I mean, just in response to COVID, the Treasury has issued more than $6 trillion. Now, $2.7 trillion were monetized by the Fed, meaning the Federal Reserve simply made up money, made up dollar signs, and bought it. Now, roughly, they say $5.1 trillion was spent through various programs, well, including checks to individuals or unemployment bonuses to those who weren't working or payroll protection plans. But the federal debt has risen $6 trillion, $6 million. And as inflation is ticking up, as the economy starts to get going again, and we have this money is not simply being socked away or put on emergencies. We watch the inflation go up. It's what, 8% now and rising? What is the answer of government? Spend more money. Borrow more money. Go deeper into debt. Oh, by the way, the interest rates are going up to deal with the inflation, which means every dollar that the federal government borrows, they're going to have to pay a higher interest rate on it, which means it's going to make our debt problem even worse. I mean, let's face it, the only reason the United States of America is not bankrupt is because everybody believes that if they keep going, that the federal government will at least pay the interest, at least pay the bills. They're caught on a tiger, and they're afraid to let go. The American people are addicted to this magic money coming out of Washington, D.C., to the point now where when something goes wrong, they don't try to fix it. They don't try to take responsibility for their actions. No, no, no. They simply want the government to take care of them. When states overspend and cities overspend, they look to the federal government for a bailout. That's the consequence of making Washington, D.C. your sugar daddy. Now, I'm going to head off to a break, but before I do, I want to remind you of a couple ways you can stay in touch with the Constitution Study. First of all, you can go to constitutionstudy.com. Everything I'm working on there, the articles, the videos, you can find right there. You can ask a question. I love when people ask questions. You can even ask that I answer your question right here on the radio program. You can see my tour dates and my calendar where I'm going to be. You can even invite me to come speak to one of your groups or one of your events. I'd be happy to see if we could set that up. Now, you can hear the Constitution Study 5 days a week at 4 p.m. Eastern on America Out Loud Talk Radio, heard on the iHeartRadio Network. Now, you can listen right from the website on our media player or on our awesome apps for Apple, Android, or Alexa. Not only can you listen to the program live, but you can listen to the podcast of previous episodes. They usually come out about 24 to 48 hours after they're heard here on the radio. You can also find me on most social media platforms, but please stay engaged with the Constitution Study. Most importantly, share what you're hearing. Share the articles, the videos, the radio programs, so that more and more people can understand the importance of reading and studying the Constitution, of protecting our rights and liberties, on how we can live as free citizens in a constitutional republic. Because if we don't protect our rights, who will? And if we don't protect them for ourselves, who will protect the rights of our children?
You've been in that situation. The person next to you is sniffling, or worse yet, coughing. Flu, cold, and coronaviruses are everywhere. Wouldn't it be great if you had a way to reduce these threats with an invisible mask as an additional layer of protection? Sold by hundreds of pharmacists and medical doctors, our American-made povidone iodine antiviral nasal spray, Cofix RX, lasts for hours deactivating viruses and germs while protecting you from airborne pathogens that make us sick. America Out Loud listeners get 20% off. Use Cofix RX while in large groups, while traveling, or for any other type of high-risk situation as an additional layer of protection to help reduce your likelihood of catching a cold, the flu, or SARS-CoV-2 viruses. Right now, America Out Loud listeners get 20% off of all orders. Click our banner ad on AmericaOutLoud.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
People often ask me, Malcolm, how do we fight the corruption? Robert Frost has said it best, freedom lies in being bold. Well, for six incredible years, bold is America Out Loud. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study, and today we're asking the question, what is the cost of federal supremacy? Now, if you take a look at the federal budget, just get an idea of how much money the federal government, quote unquote, invests in different strategies, different resources. Everything from, you know, fixing the roads to supporting different industries, different companies, subsidizing this, subsidizing that. We ask the federal government to, well, make everything better, make everything easier. Everything from push us to better gas mileage, to a green economy, to everything. So I really wasn't surprised to see that the U.S. Senate approved $52 billion to help in computer chip manufacturing. You see, suddenly, the federal government realized, you know what? We use a lot of these computer chips. I mean, they're in everything. Not just, you know, watches and phones and computers and toasters and refrigerators. Well, they're in things like missiles and military aircraft and you name it. So, of course, with all the issues with China recently, the question was, what happens when you can't get chips? With all the shipping delays, infrastructure delays caused by our overreaction to COVID, with all the problems with our supply chain, well, we don't make chips in America anymore. Now, there are a lot of reasons we don't make chips in America that much. We still make them. But there's a reason why the lowest cost chips tend to be made overseas. But that's not... Federal government says, you know what? All of a sudden, all these manufacturers cannot produce because they cannot get chips. We know the answer. The answer is start building chips in the United States. What can we do about it? How about we get rid of some of the regulations that makes it more difficult and more expensive to produce chips in the U.S.? No, that doesn't work for Washington. Well, maybe what we could do is we could kind of back off on some of the regulations that makes starting a business or building a manufacturing plant so onerous in this country. No, that isn't what they're going to do. I know the federal government illegally holds hundreds and millions of acres of land. How about we just release some of that so that you've got space to actually build these manufacturing plants? Now, that would make too much sense. Now, what the federal government's decided to do is they're going to procure $52 billion, with a B, to spend on their favorite chip manufacturing companies. That's right. They're going to pay off the manufacturers to get them to build in the U.S. In other words, instead of making chip manufacturing in the U.S. cheaper, they're going to pay off the companies that they like so that they'll come here. So after taking your money and using it to drive manufacturing out of this country, they're going to take your money to try and bribe it to come back. Now, granted, this is the early stages, a simple procedural vote. There's a lot going on, but just think of what of the underlying concept here. After doing so much to make chip manufacturing expensive in the U.S., suddenly they're going to take your money and bribe companies to bring it back. But Paul, isn't it the purpose of government to make sure we have these types of things here? It's not exactly. You see, Congress does have the authority to promote the progress of science and useful arts, but they're to do that by securing for a limited time to authors and inventors the exclusive rights to their respective writings and discoveries. In other words, Congress is not authorized to subsidize certain types of manufacturing. They're only authorized to protect inventions and to protect authors' copyrights. But again, since we want the federal government to do everything for us, now we're expecting the federal government to bribe manufacturing to come back to the United States. Now, let's not pay any attention to whether or not it's financially feasible. Let's ignore all the costs that the federal government has put in place, especially around the environmental issues. You see, because manufacturing chips involves a lot of chemicals that eventually have to be disposed of. A lot of minerals that you have to be careful how you discharge them. See, rather than saying, how do we make this simpler? How do we make it easier? No, the federal government decided we're just going to throw your money at it. And of course, when they're talking about subsidizing chip manufacturers, you do realize that the federal government's going to get to pick and choose which chip manufacturers they're actually going to subsidize and where they're going to put those subsidies. In other words, is it going to be towards building a plant? And if so, where? I wonder which states would get the best opportunity to entice chip manufacturers to come and build a plant in them. Do you think it's going to be the ones that have the best relationships with the leaders in the Senate? Or maybe it's the ones where The political parties might say, we can show all the jobs we're bringing so you'll come vote for us. Do you really think this entire process is not going to be politicized? Because if you do, I have a bridge to sell you over the East River in New York, you know. Sure, I could sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. It's just as legal as the federal government spending billions of your dollars to bribe companies to fulfill their political wishes. Why are we surprised? And of course, it's not simply business that Washington likes to meddle in. Remember, the federal government under the 10th Amendment only has the specifically enumerated powers from the Constitution. If the Constitution doesn't specifically grant a power to the federal government, the federal government doesn't have it. So the entire idea of the FDA is questionable. Okay, because since the true role of the FDA is to put in so safety warnings. You know, when you get drugs and stuff, all the safety warnings with all the possible side effects and all that stuff. And if it's for interstate commerce, okay, I can deal with that. But you see, now we have a report that the FDA is directing healthcare workers in 8 different states to stop COVID treatment because it may not be effective against the Omicron subvariant. Yeah, you have U.S., you quote, U.S. drug regulators. Okay, the federal government doesn't have the authority to regulate drugs. There's problem number one. But the FDA has said that monoclonal antibody treatment that has been used successfully, I might add, in treating COVID-19 could no longer be used in Connecticut, Maine, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, New Jersey, New York, Rhode Island, and Vermont. Now, apparently also providers in Puerto Rico and Virgin Islands have been told to stop using it as well. But why those 8 states? Why only those 8 states? And why stop using it? See, remember, the purpose of the FDA is safety and efficacy information. So when the FDA looks and says, well, it may not be effective. Well, based on what? Well, the FDA says that several studies indicated that the monoclonal, I'm not going to try and pronounce the brand name, doesn't perform well against the BA2 subvariant of Omicron. Okay. However, the GlaxoSmithKline and Vir Biotechnology, the makers of the drug, they say that testing suggested the treatment retained activity against BA2. It retained effectiveness. Well, all right, that comes from the manufacturer. You kind of expect them to be a bit biased. But again, is the FDA saying it is dangerous? No. Is it saying it does not work? They said no. But they do say some states say that it doesn't perform well. Well, you know what, FDA? As far as I'm concerned, go pound sand. You see, while you may be able to regulate safety information for products sold across state lines, you're not there to interfere with the doctor. If, in consultation with the patient, the doctor and the patient agree that monoclonal antibodies are the best option, the sotrovimab is the best option, why should they not be allowed to try because a bunch of bureaucrats in Washington says, well, see, our studies say it may not be as effective. May. And only, they mentioned it because of its effectiveness against a particular subvariant. But it looks like they put this restriction in place before that subvariant became the predominant strain. So once again, what do we see? We see the federal government meddling. And why only in a few states? And why are they picking on this? they're not saying it's dangerous. They're not saying it's, they're saying it looks like it's not as effective based on some studies. Have they studied the people in those states that have actually taken the drug? See, this is what happens when you say, we're going to put a bunch of bureaucrats in Washington in charge of making medical decisions. We're going to take this concept of public health. We're actually going to take your private health, turn it into public health, and say that the federal government can regulate it. Because remember, when the FDA says that these treatments can no longer be used in those states, that means that the people who wish to take this drug are supposed to be denied because of a federal bureaucrat. Not a law, nothing passed by executive, you know, not by legislative body, by representation of the people. Bureaucrats. See, when we stood by and allowed the federal government to become the doctor in chief, we shouldn't be surprised when they act that way. And when we allow federal bureaucrats to be the deciders of all things medical, we shouldn't be surprised when politics enters the game. So when the Americans for Public Trust submitted a FOIA request, they say they have proof that the CDC and the American Federation of Teachers worked together to create the back-to-school plan. You know, the back-to-school plan where the teachers didn't actually want to go back to school. Back-to-school plan that involved masking children that are at statistically zero chance of dying from COVID. So what happens when these public sector unions and bureaucratic agencies start working together to tell you when you'll be able to educate your kids, whether or not they'll be able to go to school? That's a good question. And I think it's a question worth answering. You see, it's not simply that when we put all the power in Washington, that Washington exercises power. Washington also attracts power. Think about it. We talk about, you know, K Street and the lobbyists. There's a reason why companies spend millions and millions of dollars for lobbying. Because they know that if they can influence legislation, if they can influence policy, if they can influence regulations to their benefit, they can benefit from it. Well, take, for example, the recent change in CAFE standards, the fuel economy standards. You see, large automakers don't mind these increase in fuel standards because they can absorb the cost of developing the changes necessary to meet these standards. Smaller upstart groups, new manufacturers, they can't afford all of that. So we shouldn't be surprised that large automobile manufacturers support these standards. They help keep down the competition. Just the way we shouldn't be surprised when companies, when the Facebooks of the world say, yes, Congress, regulate us, tell us what we can put on our platform because we can afford to comply, whereas the new kids on the block will have a harder time of doing that. See, it's not simply that by expecting Washington to do everything for us, by making the federal government the be-all and end-all, we give Washington power. It attracts power. It attracts people that wish to wield power or those who wish to buy influence. This shouldn't be a surprise to anyone. See, this is the consequence of expecting Washington to take care of everything. Because not only does it mean that power ends up in Washington, but we also end up with this one-size-fits-all solution. As if the needs of people who lived in New York, Chicago, or Los Angeles are exactly the same as those that live in Des Moines or Knoxville or Paducah. See, one size fits all generally means it fits no one. Well, generally, actually, it'll fit someone very, very well, and they will benefit very, very much from it. But for the most part, yeah, not so much. See, rather than having a federalist system where most of the decisions were made locally in interstates, now they're all handled out of Washington. And for some reason, all the policies look just like these, the policies you would expect from heavy-handed government states. There's a reason why federal policies looks much more like it belongs in New York or California than it does in Kentucky or Idaho. The problem with putting everything in Washington is they get to dictate absolutely everything. Now, I have to take another break, but before I do, I want to remind you, all of my radio programs go to podcast generally a day or two after they're heard on the radio. You can find them on any of your favorite podcast networks. Just look for AmericaOutLoud.com. And please, share the shows with friends and family. You can go to AmericaOutLoud.com and you can find the show page. Just look under schedule. You'll find all the podcast episodes as well as the articles that I write. Share them via email, via social media. Help other people find the Constitution study and help them also learn about the blessings of living as a free people.
In today's world, there's no escaping the headlines filled with warnings about emerging viruses and dangerous superbugs. Genesis is the only technology that safely and effectively obliterates harmful pathogens both in the air and on surfaces. Genesis plus HOCL neutralize these threats to your environment in just seconds. Find out more about this amazing technology at genesisfogger.com/outloud for a 15% discount. With Genesis, you'll be prepared for what's next.
Because of COVID-19, many Americans worry about their health 4 times a day. That's 112 times per month. But by simply keeping our immune system strong, we can stay healthy and put our worries at ease. One little known way to do this is by taking AC11, a patented supplement from a plant in the Amazon rainforest. Studied for over 20 years, and backed by over 40 scientific peer-reviewed studies, taking AC11 has been proven to extend the life of immune cells called leukocytes, allowing you to boost immunity naturally. Go to healthycell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of AC11. That's healthycell.com, HEALTHYCELL, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. I'm glad you could rejoin here at the Constitution Study, and we're talking about the consequences, the cost, of centralizing power in Washington. We've talked about some of the direct costs, but see, the other problem we have with centralizing power in Washington is they tend to like to centralize power in the hands of a few. Think about it. It's not simply that we expect Washington to do everything for us, specifically, we expect the president to do most of these things, even things he's not authorized to do. We talk about the president's budget. The president doesn't allocate funds. The president doesn't appropriate funds. We talk about the president's tax cuts or tax increases. The president doesn't cut taxes or increase taxes. At best, he signs a bill that was started in the House of Representatives. So, while most of the powers that end up in Washington end up actually in the hands of a few, we tend to focus on the president, but that means there are others that are working the system. We see this in the different party leadership in Congress, right? Because each house has a majority leader and a minority leader. The Senate has, you know, a majority leader and a minority leader. The House has a whip, and the House has a speaker. And because of the rules of the House of Representatives, the Speaker has a tremendous amount of power. The Speaker basically approves all the committee chairmanships. The Speaker controls the flow of legislation through the House. And recently, The speaker has determined how your representatives are allowed to vote. See, when the COVID-19 scare was at its height, even members of Congress were afraid to show up for work. They ignored the little facts and details. They decided that it was too scary for them to actually show up to work, so Speaker Pelosi introduced what she referred to as proxy voting, a system by which if you wanted to, if you were a member of the House of Representatives, but you didn't want to show up to vote, well, you could give another member of the House the ability to vote for you in proxy. Now, this was done supposedly because of a public health emergency. Yeah, well, all right, so there wasn't really an emergency. It was more a public policy emergency than a public health emergency. But you see, Nancy Pelosi has extended, at least until the middle of May, this fictitious public health emergency, this public policy emergency, to continue with the proxy voting. Now, I'm not entirely sure why. I've heard a lot of ideas. I've heard a lot of thoughts. But it's bad enough that if we the people hire representatives to represent us in the House, can't we at least expect them to show up and vote? Or has the Congress become so controlled by the political parties that your individual representative doesn't mean very much? So unless they're really willing to stand out and buck the system, it doesn't matter who your representative is, just what party they're a member of. Which may explain why senators like Manchin and Sinema get so much media attention, why they have there's so much ire from their party, because they are bucking the system. But again, it comes back to, are you hiring representatives or are you choosing a party to act as your representative? See, the idea when our nation was founded is that everyday people would serve 2 years in Congress and then go home. But it's by focusing power in Washington, by allowing the political parties to have so much sway over how the system runs, even how the elections are handled, we've given the power not just to your representatives, but that power actually becomes and lays in the hands of the party leadership that they're a member of. It turns American politics into a team sport. Either your team wins or your opponent's team wins. And that does say a lot about the state of American politics and the American people. But there's one more thing I want you to consider when you talk about the cost of centering power in Washington. See, one of the beauties of the federalist system our framers created were you had at that originally 13 different states. Now you have 50 different states, each with their own agendas, each with their own preferences, each with their own worldviews. And by leaving domestic policy in the hands of the states, that means the states could try different things. They could be different. If a state wanted to try a socialist system, a high tax system, a high regulation system, well, they were free to do so because it wouldn't impact the other states. If that system worked, other states could see it and copy it. If it didn't work, well, then states could learn from their neighbors' lessons. But you see, by centralizing everything in Washington, by creating a one-size-fits-all, you lose that possibility. You lose the experimentation. You lose the option to try new things. Everything gets decided out of Washington. And it's not just financial policy. It's not just foreign policy. It truly is the future of society. So when a president of the United States decides that children should be able to use whatever bathroom they want, that boys should be allowed in the girls' room, and states say, no, we don't think so, well, that president issues a threat. When a state decides that they're going to loosen their immigration laws or their marijuana laws, their drug use laws, the federal government tends to crack down on them as well. Granted, not so much for marijuana lately, but even that's becoming an issue. Do the states have the authority to set their own domestic policies? When one state wants to follow the Constitution when it comes to the possession of firearms or other arms, well, often they're vilified by Washington and have to fight in order to enforce their own rules. And even the gender agenda now is dictated not by your local government, not by your school board, not even by your state government. More and more, it's being dictated by the federal government. From attempts to reinterpret Title IX to have sex meaning, well, whatever a person thinks they are, to the TSA taking out gender differences in screening processes, to the State Department, which is going to allow an X gender on a passport. Now, I want you to think about this for a minute. What is the purpose of a passport? Is it not identification? Is not the purpose of a passport to be, when I'm traveling to another country or coming back from another country, proper government-issued identification? Therefore, shouldn't it be the ability to identify me, to have other people identify me? Meaning, if someone shows up at a port of entry with my passport, wearing a dress, long hair, high heels, shouldn't that put the Customs and Border Patrol official at least on alert? See, the passport says this is a man, but that looks like a woman. Now, maybe it's a man impersonating a woman. Okay, that could easily be dealt with. But if the purpose of a passport is to identify someone, why are we removing identifications from the passport? Well, the idea is simple, or I should say the reason is simple. It's because there's a social agenda running rampant through Washington, one that believes that you can think whatever you want and the universe will magically rearrange itself to make it true. That a man can be a woman simply because they say so. And they expect everybody in the world to go along with this delusion. And since the State Department, now the State Department has a role, right? Because you're talking about international travel. But how long before that filters down to the states? Are there not states already that allow a no answer when on the question of gender or sex? See, the problem is when Washington is the center of our political universe, they also become the center of our social and cultural universe. Those in Washington, those in the urban centers, get to dictate to the rest of the nation what standards are acceptable, what conduct is acceptable, what speech is acceptable, what is considered hateful and what is not. And by allowing Washington, D.C. to assume all of this power, we have truly created a monster. And while we will have to suffer the consequences of the monster we've created, we aren't the only ones. Our children and our children's children will as well. So what do we do? If Washington, D.C. has become the center of everything, if Washington, D.C. gets to set all policies, all standards, what do we do? Well, believe it or not, the answer is read the Constitution of the United States. Not simply because this is the Constitution study and it's what we do, because in the Constitution you notice a couple of things. First of all, we have a 10th Amendment, which specifically says powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. Meaning if the Constitution does not specifically say the United States can do this, they can't. Legally, that is. So when you read Article 1, Section 8, and you read things like that Congress can pass laws for the general welfare of the United States, the union of states, not each individual state, not the individual people. No, it's the union called the United States. When you read that Congress has only the power to enforce patents and copyrights, not to invest in different technologies, you realize, wait a second, they weren't vested with that power. Then a little more research and you'll find some other things, like Federalist Paper number 78, written by Alexander Hamilton, or the opinion in Marbury versus Madison that said an act of Congress contrary to the Constitution is void, is empty, it's meaningless. When you read the Constitution and realize that the states created the federal government, not the other way around, the federal government is there to serve the states, not the other way around, you begin to realize just what a mess we've made by centralizing all of our attention on Washington, D.C. But you also learn that we don't have to. That if acts of Congress contrary to the Constitution are void, why are the states following it? Why aren't the states protecting you from them? You see, every elected office, every officer of the United States and of the several states is required upon taking office to take an oath or affirmation to support the Constitution of the United States. That means if a state official stands up to the federal government and says, you are not authorized to do this, therefore we will not allow this to happen in our state, they are actually upholding the supreme law of the land. They're fulfilling their oath. They're doing their job. Sadly, since most Americans don't realize this, we tend to shy away from standing up to the federal government. And we tend to elect bureaucrats that tend to shy away as well. But if we learn the cost of centralizing all of this power in Washington, then let's also learn that there is a solution. No, it's not going to be easy. No, it's not going to be quick. Yes, there will be costs, there will be consequences, there will be pain. But is it worth it? Because if we won't protect our rights and we won't protect the rights of our children, then we will weep as they disappear. And while we may point and complain at all the people that led to this, the fault will ultimately be ours. Because we sat back and let it happen. We stood by and we watched while power was assumed, while power was centralized, and while absolute power corrupted not just the government of the United States, but governments in this country as a whole. Now, before I go, I want to remind you that Immune Super Boost is finally back in stock. That's right. If you're like me, if you love Healthy Cells products, you can once again get Immune Super Boost, and that's good news. I love it for keeping my immune system healthy, especially when I'm out on the road. Now, Healthy Cell has put together what they call their ultimate immune boosting package. See, if you buy Immune Super Boost before April 7th, they will give you a package of AC11, the DNA repair package. All you have to do is use the code OUTLOUD at checkout. And if you're not familiar with Healthy Cell, if you don't use their products, use that code, Healthy Cell. They will give you 20% off your first order. So go to healthycell.com, use the code OUTLOUD, try the Immune Super Boost, get the ultimate immune boosting package, or try any of their products. Just make sure if you want that immune boosting package, you have to order the Immune Super Boost before April 7th. So you're running out of time. Also, there are a couple of organizations that I really would like to have you check out. One is the 917 Society, the number is 917society.org. They are trying to put a constitution in the hands of every eighth grader in the country every year. And they could certainly use your help. Whether you volunteer or you contribute financially, they could use your help. Maybe also take a look at constitutionscholars.com. That's the Constitution Study site where students get together to read and study the Constitution and to teach the rising generation to be free. So I know things look bad, and I know the sky is dark, but there's light at the end of the tunnel. If we read and study the Constitution and teach the rising generation to be free, we can secure the blessings of liberty, both for ourselves and for posterity.
Stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends.